This is Paul Shaw Fox. I'm a lecturer at Machon Schechter in the Family and Community and Women's Studies tracts. I received my doctorate in psychology from the New School for Social Research before making Aliyah with my family in 1994. I received my rabbinical ordination from Machon Schechter. I am happy to participate in the Chodesh Tov podcast project. Chodesh Tov is a monthly 10-minute podcast that is a joint venture of the Schechter Rabbinical School in Jerusalem, the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies in Los Angeles, the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, and the International Rabbinical Assembly. The purpose of these podcasts is to regularly inform rabbis of the most current thinking in a wide variety of fields of Jewish studies. Today we will talk about evolutionary theories about religious development in general, and Jewish religious practice in particular. These theories draw on three main concepts. Two of these originate in the field of evolutionary biology and as intercepts with anthropology. The third comes from classical theories of social psychology. In 1975, Amos Zahavi, one of the founders of the Israeli Society for the Protection of Nature, put forth his theory of the handicap principle. This principle, also called costly signaling theory, states that the strongest members of any species will handicap themselves by wasting, in quotes, evolutionary and biological resources to signal to other members of its species its reproductive worth. The two most illustrative examples that we can recall from nature are the reindeer's antlers and the peacock's tails. It seems to be dangerous for an organism to handicap itself with such cumbersome appendages when swift movements may be a premium in the evolutionary battle for survival. The males that tout these signal clearly to the female counterpart, "I am worthy of you because my genes are strong enough to waste energy on my beauty. Therefore, our offspring will be strong like me." We know from biological data that, in general, this strategy pays off. The second biological theory is that of Robert Trivers. In 1971, Trivers coined the term reciprocal altruism. Reciprocal altruism, he described, is a behavior whereby an organism acts in a manner that temporarily reduces its fitness while increasing another organism's fitness, with the expectation that the other organism will act in a similar manner at a later time. It explains the evolution of cooperation as instances of mutually altruistic acts. Familiar cases of reciprocal altruism are found in the warning calls of birds, symbiotic cleaning, and vampire bats. To be sure, biologists argue over the small details of the behaviors, not unlike the way rabbis argue over the small details of minhag and halacha. The details are generally inconsequential to the laity. Assuming that most of my listeners are biological laity, I will spare the details and describe the general findings. When a bird calls out to the flock, it puts itself in danger of becoming prey to the predator. Potentially sacrificing itself altruistically for the survival of its flock, that is, its gene pool. The cleaner and to be cleaned fish, or its host, engage in reciprocal altruism behavior as well. The cleaner earns valuable nutrition, the host gains the elimination of dangerous bacteria. The cleaner does not become lunch, and the host sacrifices the low-hanging fruit. While what's fascinating is that there seems to be genetic programming for these two types of species to recognize each other, so that if the host and the cleaner were raised in separate aquaria, not in the open sea, therefore never learning the need for this behavior, and then they are placed together, the behavior will emerge almost immediately. What does this have to do with religion or Judaism, one may ask? Enter the evolutionary anthropologist Richard Sosis. Sosis takes these two theories and states concisely that all cultures, including or particular religious cultures, develop three types of signals. He calls them the three B's: behavior, badges, and bands. Put succinctly, we Jews daven, that is, perform a costly behavior. We wear certain clothes, talit, tefillin, kippah, and we don't do certain things that on the surface possess no biological value, for example, kashrut. If we understand the resources or currency in today's cultural world, as we will define them not cynically, these resources are time, money, and honor. The observant Jew is willing to sacrifice, that is, waste time and money, in order to accrue honor. The honor, in turn, ensures signalers' cultural reproductive fitness. Think of the time and money that goes into starim on Pesach, the purchase of lulav and etrog on Sukkot, and what we think about those who have really nice ones. And think about the honor battles that go on when volunteers feel that their time spent has turned into time wasted for lack of recognition, and the cynicism will evaporate quite quickly. We members of religious communities do all this all the time. What we must realize is that we are biological beings and that these are our resources in 2013. To address the final pillar of the three-prong theory, we must ask the question, okay, I do this in public, I do this in shul, but why do I daven when I'm at home, when I'm away from my community, and why do I keep kosher when I'm in Hawaii? Leon Festinger terms it cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is the discomfort experienced when simultaneously holding two or more conflicting cognitions, ideas, beliefs, values, or emotional reactions. In a state of dissonance, people may sometimes feel disequilibrium, frustration, hunger, dread, guilt, anger, embarrassment, anxiety, etc. We find themselves doing things that don't fit with what they know or having opinions that do not fit with another opinions they hold. Eventually, after engaging these behaviors for enough time, I bring my beliefs in line with my actions. That is, if I daven enough, I will come to believe that it is important to daven, thereby increasing my tendency to continue to daven in the future. I keep kosher because I come to believe that it's good to keep kosher. And as we learn in Sefer HaChinuch, Achrei HaMa'asim Nimshachim HaLevavot. We can analyze many numerous behaviors in Jewish religious practice with this model. Why study Torah? What a waste of time. To some, yes, but in general, even those who don't engage in regular Torah study respect those of us who do. Time is sacrifice. That is, I waste that cultural currency so important in order to gain kavod, true kavod, which in the end, according to Rambam, is the penultimate step just prior to Torah Lishma. Why learn to read Torah and Shul? Because Yasha Koach that I get when I finish feels good and wins the respect in the eyes of the wisher. Why not read the whole parasha every week? Because in a reciprocally altruistic fashion, I must allow others the opportunity, lest I be labeled the cheater who is garnishing too much accolade. Before concluding, I want to address one last area of human behavioral and religious development. That is our brains. Brains have been evolving for over a million years. 50,000 of those have been focused, as it were, at least for our concerns, on the evolution of our very big and very human brain. Our brain is so successful in the context of social cultural society because of three tendencies. One, we seek causes to our behaviors. I prayed, I gave the proper sacrifices, I observed Shemitah, if you will, and the rains came. I called out to God and a parking spot opened up. Perhaps we don't all see the connections, but our brains do, internalize information, and react accordingly. The second is our search for agents. Some have termed this the HADD, Hyperactive Agent Detecting Device. If I hear a sound behind a bush, I assume it was caused by some animate or sentient being, and I run. If it was the wind, no net loss. I ran from the wind, but I gained exercise. If, however, it was a lion, and I assumed it was just the wind, and I didn't run, I am lunch, and my genes, or memes, the memes being the cultural equivalents of genes, don't pass on. Finally, we have a theory of mind. That is, we know that others look at the world differently than I do. So if this theory of mind works really well amongst a few select individuals, they will be able to convince others of the causes and agents that act in and on the world. They will become the shaman and ultimately the religious leaders of their times. To be sure, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Tomes have been written about non-Jewish religious practice according to the model. For example, see the journal called Brain, Behavior, and Religion. At Schechter, we have founded a center to study these issues in the context of Jewish religious practice. I am happy to invite you to join us in Jerusalem on July 14th for our second conference on the evolutionary understanding of Jewish religious practice. We will record the proceedings and ultimately publish them as well. Toda rabah and Chodesh Tov.